good evening, boys and girls, wherever in this gorgeous and sometimes ugly world you may be. It's another Friday, and we have a top shelf fraud in the house. You're going to love this. It's the Lockdown Series, Volume 2, Episode 47. Can you believe that? Welcome back to the show, Amanda, Princess Guna. Hello, hola. Happy Friday.
Hola. I'm so pleased to be back.
It's good to have you back. And of
good
course,
to have you back.
Back you. On the show tonight, Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell.
Bo! I am looking forward to this one. I'll tell you that much.
Me too. I've long been a fan, and I really enjoy Hugh's shows. He's got a really unique platform. Love his audience. Absolutely hilarious. Very honest and authentic. Welcome to the Highbury Squad's Friday Fan Fraud Forum, Mr. Hugh Whizzy.
Yay!
Woo. What an intro. Wow, incredible. Yeah. I have to come back more often.
We don't do it by halves here, that's for sure.
So in our chat right now, there's the fraud gang and the squaddies. So I feel like this is going to turn into a West Side Story by the end of the night.
Squaddies.
Oh, so there she goes.
Sorry.
Turning on her bloody YouTube channel. Remember, mute.
I got it down to a T last time it didn't happen.
You did. We were very proud of you. It had only taken 2 months, but we were very proud of you. All right. Hugh, thanks so much for joining us. Our listeners have been looking forward to this too. Talk to us a little bit about, let's start at the beginning, kind of might be boring for you, but good for our listeners and for us as well. Mm-hmm. Who bribed you into becoming a Guna? How did this all start for you?
I guess earliest memory of any kind of football is around 1990 to 1991. So that would have been, you know, the pivotal moments there would have been particularly England's World Cup run. So falling in love with the game, or just understanding the importance of it because of my dad in the background. I don't actually have many memories of him, but the connection was there with football from the get-go. And I think one of the very few moments I can actually remember spending quality time with him was, I think it's 1991, Arsenal Spurs FA Cup. Whether it was semi-final or final escapes me, but basically the importance of that game, the devastating, you know, look that was strewn over his face as Gascoigne scored a ridiculous, ridiculous goal. I guess it started there and followed through with teenage years, basically spent in and around Islington up Essex Road. And my part of my schooling was at Highbury and Islington College. So, you know, I guess there have been various characters as well because of a lack of a father figure, not to go too deep, that I kind of really clicked with at Arsenal. And it would have been really around your time, Kevin, at the club as well, because of the real influence of mixed race and black players. And I have to be as upfront about that as possible. But, you know, you have to kind of see it to believe that you can be it.
Yeah.
And at Arsenal, we really were at the forefront of that. So obviously the local connection and all my friends being fans, and that's just what we did. It really was a community club back then. So much has changed. The love is still there. It's slightly more complicated because now you know the ins and outs of what was once just, you know, actually just supporting, and the love of like the fanfare, the energy that it creates when you're in and amongst friends. What we do now has changed that drastically, I guess. If only because, you know, it's super analytical. We're super critical of every touch is scrutinized, and you know, I'm sure we will get into the conversation as to where the club is going. But the memory that I have and the link basically comes from there. So,
Hugh, can I just ask you this? Obviously, that era, Amanda will know, Sophie will know, but I just want to ask you, Did you feel that there was more of a connection to the team?
100%. 100%. I know my stepdad is a journalist as well. He didn't work in sports, but he was working on in newspapers at The Standard, The Telegraph, and others.
Yeah.
And he tells me of times when you could genuinely just invite players for drinks and they would happily sit down and share, you know, stories or it was totally a different connection, not only between the media, but also just the connection between fans and players. Like being able to see players celebrating outside of the changing room or hanging outside of a changing room window.
At the windows,
You can't replicate that at the Emirates where it is, you know, we're caged out basically. And, you know, you can look through the gates to see inside the car park and maybe you get a glimpse of a Aubameyang shiny Ferrari or whatever it is, but you got to go that extra mile to get that little bit closer nowadays.
But so, the thing is, Hugh, what you just said is so true because where I used to stand in Avenel Road and see everybody on the corner where the coach, you know, was over there and we were on the corner chatting to everyone, you don't meet anyone at the Emirates because there isn't anywhere to stand where is a main focal point. Mm. So you lose that. You lose the fact that when you come out, the changing rooms are right there and they were hanging out and there were plenty of times we had brilliant sing songs down Avenel Road. There's none of that at the Emirates. But as fans, we all know that there's no connection at all. You very rarely see anyone.
I think it's more for us who experienced Highbury that feel that way, especially towards the Emirates, but also kind of even going to Hugh's experience in, 91, I mean, just football was different then. And then 92, the Premier League comes in and the landscape of the game just changes, doesn't it? Completely money, the TV deals, Sky dominating. I mean, you know, we used to get games on sporadically and you always made sure you had an appointment at 3 o'clock on a Saturday when it was the FA Cup final. And so those things have become really difficult. And I think the new generation, and Hugh, you've got a lot of young listeners, and we have a really good mix here too. I mean, we're all Generation X's here, and not to age us in any way, but that history and nostalgia is so important. You've got a lot of young listeners. Mm. You share stories with them. Like you seem to be like a history buff. It matters to you, the spine and the essence of Arsenal Football Club and where it came from.
Yeah, for sure. And more importantly, where we're going. The present is all that matters, right? That's all that we really can have any kind of influence over. So it is important to know not only where we've come from, but the direction that we're going in. And I'm not going to lie, I'm slightly worried. I have been for quite some time. But the younger...
Since Emery or since Wenger? Give me the timeline before you kind of...
way before I knew who Unai Emery was.
Okay, yes. Just checking.
You know, I've got friends who had signed out of Wenger's time way before I did. And looking back, I wish that I'd been more open at least to the idea. And maybe the transition would have been smoother then. Mm-hmm. But when I realised, it all became very apparent very quickly. And you've only got to look at what is readily available information now to see that we are almost alone in terms of the way that we operate in the Premier League. And it is having a massive impact to the point now where I actually think, without getting too like conspiratorial about it, that fans are just being duped, that we have been brainwashed into believing that we have a chance when... You know, genuinely, you really don't. And it comes down to one thing, and that is money. Unfortunately, the situation as it stands is being portrayed as though in recent times we are being supported financially. I have to tell whoever doesn't understand that we are anything but being supported financially by our owner. In fact, it's completely the opposite. We're actually paying this guy. It's a guy who's taking literally millions of pounds in advisory fees and has put squat diddly into the club. There are no other clubs in the Premier League, barring Manchester United, who have had, and that in itself is fucking ridiculous, but we stand alone in terms of the lack of support that we're getting. And that is never going to be a way to make the success that we're all dreaming that we should be kind of achieving happen. It's just not going to happen.
It's a sad state of affairs, though, that the fact that you're sitting there saying all this, and it's pure facts, and it's such a shame.
Well, we always discuss it, don't we?
Yeah, Kevin Boyle. I don't know anyone that likes Cronkies anyway. No, there, so.
But it's the mindset of the club from way back to now. Mm. You could just see it's been ebbing away. Like I say, we got sold down the river, Hugh. I said we got sold down the river before anybody could realise. The water was nice. The sun was shining. Mm-hmm. We were just floating down the river. And then all of a sudden, the water started getting choppy and you're looking for the oars. There's no oars. The motor don't work. Do you know what I mean? How are you going to survive?
There's no life jacket.
There's no life jackets. And all of a sudden, the boat sprung a leak. So you're going down. What are you going to do?
And Kev, what have they done? They've put Band-Aids over the leak for years and years and years and years, and that's been such a problem. And a lot of our squaddies in chat here are agreeing with what you're saying, because, you know, we always say, and we've talked on this show, how they then kind of got to the point where they'd signed that one marquee player, appease us for the season, right? Santi, then you had Ozil, then Alexis Sanchez. But Kev always says too, like, they never backed that up with the fact that we needed centre backs, the fact that we never replaced Patrick Vieira, the fact that we never did all of these things, and the fact that they enabled Wenger and Gazidis, and this ownership didn't really care whether their executive team was challenging for the Premier League. It was all about, you know, the bottom line at the end of the season
and qualify for the Champions League.
Yeah.
Appease the fans.
Well, that's what he told me when I met him.
We could rake it in. Yeah.
But you know, when you work out, you sit here and work out how much money Wenger made out of our club. Easy, £100 million for the amount of time he was there. You think about that. For all the people that have a go at me when I talk about the fact that we're still trying to cope with the after effects of Arsene Wenger. And don't get me wrong, the first 10 years were phenomenal. No one can deny that. But the fact of how much money that man earned, I
should jump to his defense slightly, because if only because I think there is a real misconception about money and elite quality. Basically, I hear this kind of thing with people who are not sure whether Cristiano Ronaldo is as good as he is, they'll say, but he hasn't done it at, or, Lionel Messi, who hasn't left Barcelona, can he do it in the Premier League, etc., etc. The reason that Lionel Messi doesn't play for Stoke or, you know, hasn't gone to, and there's nothing wrong with playing for Stoke, it's amazing, but the reason that he doesn't...
Hey, my son's there, Hugh, so what's
that? That's why I was laughing. I'm like...
Yeah, my son's there, so that's ease up off that.
I just said, that's great.
Summarise right? Yeah. More time.
That is great, but the reason he doesn't play for a team who aren't at the top level is because he is an elite individual. The best go to the best. Pep Guardiola is not going to manage a side who are in League One for the challenge. They're going to the place that offers them the best chance of success. Mm-hmm. And Wenger was, and to my mind, it will always be, one of the elite managers that's ever touched the game, and as a result, deserved top whack. If you had brought in an elite manager of a different name, pick one that you fancy, he wouldn't have been cheap. So over the course of X amount of years, of course he's going to make a lot of money. What he made the club is probably, I would imagine, 100 times that.
Mm. But my point is, Hugh, you bring up Ronaldo and Messi, they're still doing it, and you're going to pay them to do it. Wenger wasn't doing it. He would be doing it if he hadn't. No, he wasn't. We came out of the Champions League. We ended up in the Europa League. He wouldn't buy defenders.
They didn't pay him top dollar for that.
Again, I think that it's really important to clarify.
You can't compare him to Ronaldo and Messi. Because they're still doing it.
I will always consider him to be one of the elite.
For a period of time, he was.
For 20 years, he was.
Amanda, here's the scoop. The reason why they paid Wenger so much money is because, you know, it's like a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. They get paid money because they make the company money. and he made Arsenal a lot of money, right?
Yeah, you're doing talking about the business on the pitch.
Yeah, but look where we are in the Premier. Look where we are in the Premier League since he's left. The facts are the facts. We've lost Champions League football, yes, under him, but at the same time, we've not been able to kind of get that back. Look what's happened to Manchester United.
But he left us when we weren't in the Champions League. We weren't in it with him.
No, but the point is that for years with average teams, he was able to qualify for the top four, and he did it consistently over and over again. And the point is, hold on. Sir Alex Ferguson, same thing at Manchester United. Look how difficult it has been to replace these managers. Both teams have regressed in the Premier League, and you could argue in the Champions League as well. Well, this season, and because it's not been a great season in the Premier League. I wasn't happy with Wenger. The last 5 years, I think we all agree, should have left after maybe the second FA Cup. But the point is that we also have to recognise that he was running a business. You know,
he wasn't running a business.
No, but that's the point. He shouldn't have been running the business.
His job,
but that's the reality, guys.
His job is to manage the team.
He did that too.
But he never improved the team. This is why Princess Guna is saying he earned a lot of money, but if we could see that we need a centre-back and centre-midfielders, Arsene Wenger surely must be able to see it. But he never addressed the problem.
We weren't talking about the team. We were talking about financially and what he brings to the club.
No, I'm saying PG was talking about his job.
Yeah.
Because that is part of running the club. If you say he's running the club, he's the manager.
Yeah, but how many years did he qualify for the Champions League consistently? No. That's what the club wanted. He did his job. He delivered on his mantra.
Yeah, but
I think it's either 21 or 22 consecutive years. To fall out of the Champions League once in that time is a sensational achievement, especially given the financial restrictions that those different times are what we're talking about, though. Over that period of time, it's an incredible achievement, especially given the restrictions that the club have been placed under financially. Now, that may not have been Wenger's choice. I don't really know the ins and outs of whether he was able to dip into the transfer market willy-nilly and splash 60 million on a centre-back like Pep can do whenever Laporte goes down. Now, obviously, times have changed in the game. And it is, I think, a good thing that we have maybe moved on and the club is looking for a new solution. What I think is also quite clear is that the solution wasn't just chopping and changing the manager, because as a footballer, Kevin, and you know, you will know, I'm sure you will back this up. You can put any manager in front of Arsenal, basically as the face of the club. You can do tactics till you're blue in the face, but if your players let you down on a regular basis, and the quality of those players is not up to the scratch of the people that are in and around the top or challenging, then you, my friend, are onto a loser. Yeah. So I really don't want to hear about the Wenger earned this much money and this is what's damaged the club. Look, that's all well and good. If we backed him with sufficiently good enough players, we wouldn't be where we are now. Whose decision is that?
It's ownership. That's ownership. But listen, I agree with you. For years, I mean, we've had debates about this on the Highbury squad, and we know on paper, the team looks all right, but the game ain't played on paper. They have continually let the club down by not being able to perform when it really matters. That's the bottom line. Mm. And how everybody thinks it's just going to change like that, it's not.
Yeah, we know that.
I really do admire people that wake up, you know, silly hours o'clock in the morning all over the world to continually follow the club and, you know, reinvigorate themselves with this kind of hope that things are going to change. And maybe they do briefly for that 90 minutes even. They might give us the odd good performance. We're all kind of kidding ourselves though, right? Because we're a long, long way off, and we all recognise that if you want to transform a club in the way that, let's say, Liverpool have done, and I often hear like, oh, Arteta can do a job like Klopp has done at Liverpool. we need to really look at what's happened there for them to transform themselves from a club that were in a similar position to Arsenal, mid-table mediocrity, nothingness, Brendan Rodgers taking notes on the sidelines from Wenger whilst we duppied them left, right and centre. Business is what's got them to the top. Replacing man for man with a superior player. Yep. That costs money, investment, and Arsenal, so far, have not been willing to make that investment. This doesn't mean, oh, we've spent £135 million or whatever it was last season. This doesn't mean you've spent £400 million over the last four seasons at an average of 100. It means that you go big to get back involved. Because what we're actually doing is one step forward, two steps back. And the level of investment that people are actually convinced that Kroenke is doing us a favour with is actually down to the financial situation that the club have got themselves in due to, ironically enough, the way that it was handled whilst Wenger was in charge.
Huge.
We are self-sufficient to the point where we've been able to manoeuvre the money around and make this £144 million or whatever it was window happen. It's actually amazing. The only club over the last 5 years in the Premier League that have had no money put in making that happen. The fact, though, that we have been kind of brainwashed into believing that he's doing us a favour is where we're going wrong.
Let me ask you a question then. If he was restrained with money, if he wasn't given money over the last five, six, seven, eight, whatever it was, years, why did he stay? Why didn't he go to one of the big clubs apparently that were...
Are we talking about Wenger?
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean,
you know what? So,
I wasn't a Wenger out.
I wish he'd gone with my life and soul. I wish he'd gone. If he'd gone to Real Madrid, picked up a couple of Champions Leagues with a Florentino Perez who would have given him £150 million for one player, I would love to have seen what Arsenal fans would have said. I swear to God. He deserved it. He deserved a lot more than he got out of Arsenal.
But why didn't he?
Because it was clearly his baby. It's clearly his baby. He clearly the love of his life that he didn't want to let go, even when it had gone too far. There's no.
I think there are certain managers of teams. I agree wholeheartedly with Hugh.
Sorry. Are you saying you don't think that Wenger would have won trophies with Real Madrid? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that Arsenal wasn't his baby. He was there. He controlled the club, Hugh. I find it fascinating that I'm listening to this, if I'm honest, but everyone's entitled to their opinion. Do I think he would have gone to Real Madrid and done that? I don't know.
We never will know, I guess.
No, of course not. And
most managers who go to Real Madrid will win a Copa del Rey, or they'll win, you know, they'll win something. But a trophy.
Yeah, there's just that one trophy that people have kind of, unfortunately, associated or just kind of linked with, or linked as the definition of the success that he has fallen short of by not winning that.
I wonder if he had
the Champions League final
kahunas to actually go, because Real Madrid and Barcelona, whoever wanted him at the time,
international teams wanted him. Many clubs wanted him.
He's a club that wasn't giving him any funds.
Because you know why? He also had an ego, and he was definitely one of those managers that tried to create with what he had. And I would say that if Daniel Levy hadn't have fired Pochettino, he would still be at Tottenham too, because he considered it a project as well. There's certain managers of certain teams and times that have more of a vested interest from a coaching, growing, nurturing, building perspective, because they also got all the power for a while, and that has everything to do with it too.
But you know, I mean,
but it was getting worse. This is the problem.
There's no denying that we regressed.
No, I'm just saying
as a football team.
But that is his job. His job is to. He's an experienced manager.
So why do you give Arteta so much leeway now when his
Arteta's
job in the Premier League hasn't improved?
Arteta's been there 14 months.
20 years.
18 months.
You cannot...
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer then, right?
You cannot balance the two. You can't balance Ole Gunnar Solskjaer against Sir Alex Ferguson. So you can't balance Arteta against Arsene Wenger.
We've regressed in the Premier League. There is no doubt about that. But to poo-poo Wenger's legacy at Arsenal because of how it ended.
We're not poo-pooing it. Don't go down that road.
Who said that? Nobody's ever said
Listen,
that.
Listen, when I met Arsene Wenger and had the chat that most people would have loved to have had, he was an amazing man with a... I found it
fascinating.
He's
still an amazing man.
He is, and I'm not... this is not an attack on him as a person. He stayed too long, Hugh, and that's the end of it.
But we all know that. That's the reality.
Well, I don't think anyone's kind of denying that. I don't think anyone's denying
that.
But my point is, if he loves the club so much,
why?
I mean, maybe you're... going to question his love for the club. I've had conversations with him where it's quite clear that he is still desperately in love with the club.
Oh, so God, yeah, Hugh, I would never question that.
It's each to their own opinion. I mean, the one thing that I try to do in life is live in the present moment. So we really are kind of...
Let's talk about that then.
It is not really important anymore. We have to move on. And, you know, regardless... of whether you feel like he's left us in a good, bad, or worse, better situation than when he joined, we are where we are. We've kind of got to deal with the present.
Yeah, we've got to deal with it. Yep.
So let's deal with it. Let's talk about the present and the now. We've got a massive game this weekend. I want to get everyone's take on how we're going into this. We all know that in the Premier League, losing 11 games for the Arsenal is never a good thing. Some fancy improvement, Hugh. Others don't. We three are on differing pages when it comes to Arteta a little bit. My biggest concern is the lack of improvement in the league, despite maybe an improvement at the back. I think it's superb. He won the FA Cup in his first season. Incredible achievement to beat City and Chelsea and be part of that. What's your take on Arteta? Where do you stand right now, especially as we go into what I think is a huge game for him? He's never beaten Mourinho as a player or a manager.
Well, I mean, I am past the point of thinking that it's actually important to focus on the manager because I got to be honest, I gave up on Arsenal's players a little while ago. Mm-hmm. I think the very day that I realised that it wasn't only the situation we were in with the manager, with Wenger. It was Wenger who was in charge at the time. His 1,000th game. You will remember a game against Chelsea, an unforgettable 6-0 battering, where I just thought they not only let him down and the club down, but they really let themselves down and exposed the weakness, the frailties in ability and mentality. Some of those players are still at the club, playing for the club on a regular basis, which is just baffling to me how I'm supposed to then buy into what they're selling. There are limits to what Arteta will be able to achieve with the squad that he's got. And unless he is given sufficient backing, I'm actually not going to invest my, you know, full soul because I'm not delusional enough to not be able to see what's actually going on anymore. It's here for us in black and white. Yeah, the financial reports might be a year behind, but I can still see what's going on. And it's not enough. So, the game against Tottenham, it's a great big game, and I will obviously be fully invested for those 90 minutes where I get lost and forget about any financial reports or anything like that. As it stands, yeah, we can talk about the football. I think that Arsenal are actually making progress in terms of the style of play. I think that we're going to have to iron out a few things, but also that we are being held back by footballers with incredibly limited ability and just like brain cells that are clearly lacking for a professional footballer like Granit Xhaka. I hate to say it, but professional footballer who is captain of his country and clearly a manager's favourite, many managers' favourites, starts every game for Arsenal, basically. To not know that you cannot be taking a first touch before making a pass when you are inside the box and under pressure is mind-blowing. So again, I just can't really look past that limited ability. And I'm not going to be blaming Arteta or looking for another manager in the meantime, whilst things are really as bad as they are, because, you know, we haven't done ourselves any favours with the players that we've got.
No, we're a mentally impotent team, and we've suffered from mental impotence for years. And unfortunately, there's no magic bullet to fix that when it's become like an institutionalized problem. DNA culture needs to change. We talk about that a lot on our show, Hugh. Are you guys scared about Sunday, Kev? I'm going to start with you. You're never scared going into a derby, whether it's against Liverpool or Spurs. But as a player going into this, what are you thinking?
I'm not scared at all, because this team can turn up and win. But I have one fear, is us shooting ourselves in the foot. That's my only fear. If we could defend properly and stop making dumb mistakes, we can beat Spurs. But if we start giving them gifts, it makes it too difficult, because we can't come back from keep giving teams, good teams, legs up. It's impossible to do, especially at this level.
What's your take, Amanda?
Weirdly, I'm not scared, and I'm not sure why. Because normally, the minute that final whistle went last night and the North London Derby's next, I'd be plutzing and stressed and all over the place. I've been going to derbies since 1982. So it's a long time for me. And, you know, I work in an office now full of Arsenal, which is amazing. I'm one Spurs fan. And we were talking today. I said, I'm not coming in Monday if we lose. So there's always that part to it. But when I watched last night, at 1-1, I was fuming like everybody else. We keep shooting ourselves in the foot. We keep missing chances that we have to put away. I never saw 3-1 coming. I did predict at the beginning of the game 2-1, but I felt a bit positive last night. But a 1-0, I thought, here we go again. I honestly could not see it. And Kev's right. We don't know what's going to happen on Sunday. You just cannot call it with Arsenal anymore. And that's the frustrating part. And what I wanted to say to Hugh was, it's like we're in the wilderness and Arteta is grabbing at everything to get us back to some sort of normality of playing football. But it's going to take time, a long time. It doesn't seem to have the financial backing. We cannot buy those players that we've been talking about. But I do feel, and I still stand by this, that we have to give him to the end of next season. He's had COVID. You know what I say all the time? The COVID situation, the fact that he has had no pre-season. We need to give him time. I know a lot of people are saying, no, it's December and he's out for me. And what? Another one comes in and another thing happens again. We need Kroenke's to be out. That's the most important part of this club. The mentality of them, they couldn't give a flying toss about Arsenal. Hugh's right. They take the money out. That's it. They're not interested. And this is no disrespect to any of our foreign fans. They're American. What love do they have for building this club up? They don't. They've never been Arsenal fans. And I've got fans all around the world that I'm friends with.
The Leicester fans are from Asia. What does that matter? If they're engaged, they're engaged. If they're not, they're not. It doesn't matter
because
about
the
them being American.
Because the Kroenkes are not engaged. They're just not engaged.
But it doesn't matter where they're from. They're just not engaged owners.
Asia was brought up with football. America was brought up with American football. Soccer was not when I was growing up. When I had friends in America, they didn't even know.
Obviously, it's his first love. Look what John Henry did for Liverpool. I mean,
yeah,
he's an American.
I'm talking
owner.
In the 80s and the 90s. It wasn't soccer in America. Didn't really exist. So what, Kroenkes supported Arsenal all their lives, did they?
That's not what's in question. They're all sports ownership. They own an NFL team. They own an NBA team. They own an MLS team. Well, of course, they're businessmen at the end of the day, but so are the Liverpool owners. So are the City owners. So is Roman Abramovich.
But Roman Abramovich loves football.
It's about the mentality of the owners versus where they come from. Because
it's football, it's business. I don't mind having both, but you've got to have the football part. That's the most important part. They're not interested in the football part. My point is,
there's been football in this country a long time, and Pele came and played here, and Beckenbauer came and played here. The New York Cosmos are an iconic team. So that's all I'm saying on
well,
that
in the
front.
80s, the New York Cosmos were an iconic team in England.
You were saying that there's no love for soccer here or whatever it was, or the soccer thing and them growing up not knowing about football and stuff. Football has become a business. Their owners, they invested in a business. And at the end of the day, you know, Leicester owners invested, City did, Chelsea have, Abramovich saved them. It's the mentality of the owner, not where the owner is from, because Liverpool's owner helped them win the Premier League again and gave them a Champions League.
Yes, because he was into soccer.
Cronk he's a baseball on. Guy. He owns the Boston Red Sox.
Doesn't mean he's not into soccer, though. We know for a fact the Cronk is on.
He's into winning. He's into winning. That's the difference. He wanted to win. He invested in the team to win. The mentality is completely different to the Cronkies.
Yeah, our culture. Absolutely. The culture of Arsenal changed. We all know David Dean was instrumental to how Arsenal moved in at Highbury. You know, that winning mentality, get the best players in. We you know, new ownership, we just don't have it. The winning culture went a long time ago.
Kev, I was going to call you Campbell. Kev, I don't think David Dean would have sold out to Cronkay if he'd have known. David Dean is as passionate Arsenal as all of us. Mm. I don't think he knew what was coming.
Yeah.
Well,
hold on, Hugh's got something.
He's laughing at me.
We can't hear you, Hugh. Yeah, go on.
Is that good? I just think we need some actual, you know, realistic, we are where we are talk. Because unfortunately, he did sell us out to Cronky, and regardless of whether he knew or not, these are how the chips have landed. In terms of the football, because I do want to spin a little bit of positivity on this. It does sound a little bit like we are all, you know, in the midst of dark times. And as a football club, look, I get we're in mid-table. It's dark, right? It's really dark. Mm. This is, whatever is happening is going to take time. And whether that is us solidifying ourselves as mid-table, you know, is about to, I guess, unfold in front of our eyes. I don't think that they're gonna back him, basically. They're gonna back him. I don't mean that they're gonna back him financially, but they're not gonna back out of this project. They've really gone out on a whim here by giving a guy who's got little to no experience a job which is incredibly, you know, sought after, I would have thought, in terms of top managers. I would have thought not long ago the likes of Klopp, Guardiola and whoever else would have contemplated coming to Arsenal. Now, the fact that Arsenal have made the decision to back Arteta means that as fans, because we don't have any chance of actually getting Cronky out, please correct me if I'm wrong, because if there's a way, let's go. that means that you may as well just get on with it, right? Now, unless we're doing something. So focusing on the football and what we have at our disposal right now, is he doing as well as he could be doing? Probably not, but he's dealing with some serious problems. How many players are there out on loan right now? How many?
Five, seven.
There's
seven players on loan.
There's Torreira, Guendouzi, Mavrobanos, Saliba, Willock, Maitland-Niles, Kolasinac, seven.
That is, as a man manager or someone that's going to have to deal with the ins and outs of, you know, the personable relationships that you have on a day-to-day basis, that is going to be or have been a lot of work. Never mind the fact that he's had the Mesut Ozil situation. Never mind the fact that we are in lockdown times and whatnot is going on. Plus the fact that it's his first job. We've got to be patient as they continue to build a team around him that will take us forward. I'm convinced we will go forward. They're not going to, even as a business model that Cronky has invested in, this self-sufficient thing that just runs itself and makes him money, he's not going to want that to fail. So I'm convinced that regardless of whether it is Arteta or not, they will not only give him time, but we will end up in a better place than we are right now. For this weekend, for the football, am I worried about Spurs? More so about Mourinho and how much of a an advantage he has in terms of mentality over Arsenal as a club, if I'm honest. He's definitely been able to have, I guess, some kind of impact there in terms of giving belief to players. There's been a real cash injection there. I know Tottenham have taken out a huge amount of loans recently, and they have ambition to be, you know, there or thereabouts challenging. Obviously, much like Arsenal, it hasn't really been working out this season. So I think a pinch of salt is needed for fans who are just, you know, completely down in the dumps, basically, because it's probably the strongest Tottenham squad that I've ever seen in my life. And they are still, I mean, touch wood, going to go another season, yet another season, without silverware. In terms of the direction, though, they have a fantastic new stadium and the opportunity is there for them to go forward. And if they do win here, which I think Kane and Son helped that to happen last time, then it wouldn't be that much of a shock. Against Olympiacos, I actually thought we saw signs of a little bit of progression, some promising pressing from the front. There is, you know, a lazy way, in my opinion, of looking at the game as a given. Because much like we've all talked about, football's moved on slightly from the days when we used to turn up at Olympiacos and smash them 5-0 with a bunch of kids. They are a seriously difficult team to beat in their league. They've lost once in 25 games. They're blessed with players who genuinely 6 months ago used to play for Arsenal and or were transfer targets for Arsenal. International players like Bruma, experienced players like Valbuena, and obviously players who've caused us a problem already, like El Arabi. So it is a testament to what we are doing that we have been able to get a 3-1 win. And with newish pieces, Partey is still finding his feet. Odegaard has got so much potential that I don't think we even realise yet. We haven't unlocked.
We realise him.
We do. Okay. We do. We really like him.
Well, you know, so in terms of that, again, I'm clinging on to this little bit of hope, but as a fan and someone watching what I think will, from a coach's perspective, be a, such a massive job, there are signs that we are making a little bit of progress, if only in terms of the fact that we've got to get rid of so many before we can even begin to look at bringing them in because of the way that we're set up.
Let me ask you guys this then. And actually, Danny from our good friend from A Burkamp Wonderland said that if you count every single level, that there's 16 Arsenal players that are on loan or out from the core of the club, which is incredible. So if you're looking, the team sheet comes out, like, because, you know, the sky always falls and the Arsenal Twitter sphere absolutely collapses and falls to pieces, Super Kev, when it comes to team sheet coming out. But in this instance against this team, it means and matters more. And like Hugh says, as maybe, you know, he's kind of not as romantically involved week in, week out, because he feels the pain and sees the reality in his Arsenal universe. The truth is that there's so many romantics out there that do still believe we can smash and we can beat them. And so who is it that's going to be on that team sheet that you see and makes your heart sink on Sunday?
Look, my heart doesn't sink. That's what other people do. I trust if Arteta's going to pick a team, he's picking a team for a reason. So whoever he chooses, I'm fine with it. It's other people who get bent out of shape when this one's not playing or this one's on the bench and this one's coming on, and, you know, it goes crazy. I just think Mikel Arteta must be given the opportunity to manage these players. And whatever he chooses, remember, on his head be it. At the end of the day, because Princess, you say something really well, actually. A lot of the time we get to this situation, we don't know what's happening in training. We don't know anybody who might be having a little niggle. There's been the last two games was Burnley, which we were we were all right first half, and then second half we were all over the place. Then there was a tough game, albeit we made it difficult for ourselves at times, obviously against Olympiacos. So now we're coming back. Who's got knocks? Who hasn't? We're not sure. So whoever he chooses to pick on Sunday will be the team he thinks can win that game. I don't get bent out of shape with whatever he chooses or whoever he chooses to bring on.
Well, it's also as well, though, Kev, whether he chooses to win the game, he may want to bring a player into the first 11 that has got a knock and he's got no choice. He has to replace that player. The big thing for me was Partey last night. I cannot believe everyone was losing their shit when they took him off. The boy's not 100% fit. We're just trying to get him fit, get him match fit. Yeah. You know, if he would have got injured again, playing 90 minutes, everyone would have gone mental at Arteta for not subbing him.
We got Spurs on Sunday. Absolutely. Why didn't you take him off? Yeah. You can't win.
It took Saka off and it made sense to me. It's like, yeah, brilliant. You know, we've won the game. Saka should come off. He needs that rest. But I don't know. Listen, everyone's entitled to their opinion. That's fine. But I find it very strange that, you know, we've got to treat Partey delicately, obviously. You know, he's our linchpin.
Hugh, what's your take on all of this with regards to people losing their marbles at starting players? We know that we have a weak source team in certain areas. If you're going to talk about baller players who'd be number one on the team sheet, Kieran Tierney, perhaps, Thomas Partey when fit, Gabriel proving himself to be a bit of a baller. You know, Aubameyang's always going to have to play because he's going to give you sometimes the best chance to score, as poor as he's been this season. You've got Saka, who's young, and we don't want to burn him out at all. What's your take on all of this? Where do you stand with, do you get caught up in any of that stuff?
I'm not sure I completely understand the question. Is it like, which are my favourite players?
So the question, the original question is, who's your heart going to sink if you see on the start in the starting lineup? And do you take all of that into consideration? Like, does it matter to you? Or are you more of a, I'm just going to talk about it after the game versus implode with the team that he's selected before the game?
Yeah, this is the danger with getting too wrapped up in a team sheet, right?
Right.
It's funny, right? The thing that you said just there, right, about fans would have, you know, or Arteta can't win, basically. If he pulls Partey off and Arsenal lose that game against Olympiacos, it's, oh my God, why did you take one of our best players off? It's your fault. And then, you know, if we don't get the win, it's different. He is basically...
Damned if he doesn't, damned if he don't.
Exactly. And I am fully of the opinion that if you are good enough in whoever's made the decision to bring you on and make you sign a contract for the club, if you play for Arsenal Football Club, that you should be good enough to start, right? If you're in the squad, you should be good enough to start. There are going to be players who are elite and shine through, and obviously his record speaks for itself. But for me, the first name on the team sheet, form or not, has to be Aubameyang. Full stop, has to be Aubameyang. If only because we've invested so much in him. And for so long, he's been a get-out-of-jail card and consistent enough. Partey is going to be one of those players. So as you continue to piece other similarly elite individuals together, hopefully the jigsaw becomes more complete. But as far as lineups and whatnot, you know, that's on Arteta. That's his choice. I'm going with whatever we do for the start. I back it for the whole 90 minutes. I watch intently. I do actually get to a period in the game where I think, okay, you need to make a change now. Because,
yeah. I think we all do.
That cannot have been worse or more frustrating than during Wenger's time. So I'm actually all
similar.
Right.
Yeah, it's very similar. Do you think then, we've talked a lot on the show about the priority, where it lies. And what I love about Pep, but it's always easy when you have a team like him and you've had his pedigree, he goes for every trophy every season. You know, he's possessed about winning the quadruple. I think Arteta has an ego too, and he's definitely possessed and determined by winning and at all costs. And he's been unafraid to upset certain players and just call the riot act, which is in essence helping evolve that culture a little bit in the dressing room. Do you think we're still a cup team, Hugh? And then we'll go around the table here in the sense that really our best chance is the Europa League. Do you believe that we could do that?
Okay. The difference between what you've just said, right, isn't just the money. Obviously, the money and Manchester City's situation is very different. It's polar opposites to Arsenal Football Club.
Correct.
I watched an interview with Sheikh Mansour, who for the best part of half an hour tried to explain to his, you know, the Man City fan base that he was not only intent on winning the Premier League, but winning every trophy, and not just intent on winning every trophy, but intent on winning every trophy every year. And that is infectious. It really did make me envious that they are able to do what initially I think everyone at Arsenal was set against, but now we see is like the only way. Mm-hmm. So without ownership who have that mentality or a similar mentality, maybe you could, you know, peg it back a bit and be slightly more realistic, but a similar winning mentality, nothing's going to change, really. So yeah, you are not going to be challenging for the Premier League title. That's just a given. Maybe in terms of like probability, if you throw a dice enough times, it will land on a six. We might have one lucky year. But basically, no. I don't know if you've looked at the general wage structure of Premier League teams. The total wage bill is often pretty similar. It's almost parallel to where you finish in the league. And as a result of the lack of serious investments, we are going to be a cup team. And it has kept us happy. I love a day out at the FA Cup final. Oh, mate. It's a special, unforgettable day, right? But let's be realistic. We haven't been a team that have challenged for the title for a long time. I don't see us being a team that challenged for the title for a long time. And that means that, yeah, we're a cup team. So I guess, yeah.
So yeah, maybe we're in with a shout to win Europa League. This Kev, we've talked about tough. There's still tough teams in it as well, guys. Yeah. You know, you've and there's the chance that we could meet, you know, the enemy down the road as well. I'm not sure I'm not sure my heart can take that. Would you guys hide under a rock or just go for a long run like Forrest Gump?
Think about it.
No, I'd want to watch every second of it.
Oh,
You'd feel alive. You'd feel alive.
Oh, big time. Big time.
You'd film something.
Big time. Big time. Big time.
I think I'd rather try base jumping than watching that game.
You know, it's funny though. I think the reason why people are so, or would be so worried about that game is really representative of where the club are, because you know, there was a period of time where you just fully had the confidence that players who had the badge on their chest understood the value of that. They understood that this means everything to us. I'll be honest, I don't actually care where we finish in the table, as long as you don't lose those two games. That's it, because I don't want to have to deal with going to school and hearing this, that, the other. I don't want to have to deal with the stick that I get in WhatsApp now, 500 messages a day every time we concede a goal, more memes. So knowing that there were players, or at least, you know, there are some players who understand and they're going to lay their lives down, that would give you more faith. The fact that we know that we have players who have continuously shirked responsibility, they just point to other people, pass it to him, I'm not really interested, or they're just walking around or doing whatever, means that, yeah, we're worried. Especially when you're seeing stats all over Sky Sports News. They really want to force feed this Son Kane record stats.
Oh yeah,
you know. So yeah, sleep.
They're selling it like sugar. They're selling it like sugar. This, you know, the way cereal companies sell to parents, and it's they are the soup du jour, and they definitely are waiting for that moment. I actually think the media onslaught, if Spurs just win the League Cup, is going to be absolutely huge and awful for Arsenal fans.
Well, it would be a sign of progression.
Maybe. Yes. You know? Yeah. And that's a big, that's, you know, that's what we don't want to see. That's been the one thing We don't have much left to brag about, really. And the fact is that the difference is, I hope history doesn't repeat itself. And he does what he did at United in his first season, where he won the Europa League and the League Cup. If there's one manager that can freaking do this, it's him. And that's a big problem for Arsenal as well, Hugh, Amanda and Kevin. It's because of who's managing them. Under Pochettino, I didn't think it was as scary.
Yeah, no, Mourinho knows how to win, that's for sure. Whether he can win with Spurs, right, listen, remains to be seen, doesn't it? At the end of the day. But the fact of the matter is, they're in a final. Yeah, they play Man City, but they're in a final. And when you're in a two-horse race, anything could happen.
Yeah. I think they're going to win it.
And you know, excuse me, don't even say that.
Let me tell you something. I think they're going to win it, but I think we're going to win the Europa League, and that will out-trump it. And get in the Champions League.
Wow.
It could be painful for us. It could be, but I don't expect Manchester City to not take care of business. That's the truth.
Yeah, but as you know, Kev, when you watched them against United last Sunday, if they don't turn up, Tottenham will do them.
It's funny, right? The financial records that we've all been talking about show that Tottenham have overtaken Arsenal now for second year in a row. And it is, or would be, them winning a trophy would signify some kind of justification in the poison chalice that Mourinho really is. They've known the trouble that he was going to cause. They thought it was worth it because he could be the guy that gets them over the line to do this, you know.
The difference is as well, Daniel Levy has been a Tottenham fan since he's been born. It makes a little bit of a difference. So he wants it more, just as any other. The whole family are proper Tottenham fans.
They're willing to risk, aren't they?
So you would. Can you imagine me in charge of Arsenal? I'd risk everything just to win the Champions League.
He's played it safe too. He could have given Pochettino a lot more and invested a lot more, but he's also fiscally kind of, you know, very conservative. But what he's done is he's gone and got a manager to kind of, you know,
get them over the line
and win. They're not there something. Yet. Well, they're in a shout with doing it twice. And I'm not going to talk about that anymore because I know Hugh's got to duck out as well. I promised him a hard stop at 8. There's 3 minutes in. Hugh, brilliant stuff, really engaging conversation. Do you think in true radio show style, you'll promise to come back?
Of course. Yeah, absolute pleasure having me on. As I say, you know, the Arsenal is quite a depressing conversation a lot of the time, but we keep the faith. We're all going to get there, and it will be all the more special when we do. So
That's right.
Thanks for having me, guys, anyway.
You can find Hugh on Twitter, KC at Hugh Wizzy. Check out his YouTube channel. Any other stuff you want to promote or talk about, flog while you're here, Hugh?
No, just, you know, search Hugh Izzy, something will come up. I'm usually there, wherever that is.
Oh, thanks, Hugh. It's been brilliant.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Thanks for a great
conversation. Bye. Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Take care, guys.
Bye. Bye. The fantastic Hugh Izzy there.
Very good.
Very good.
Yeah.
Knows, I like deep thinkers, you know, when they actually have a lot of facts to back up what they're saying, in the sense that, you know, he sees things from a financial point of view, knows, you know, about other clubs, wage structure, you know, all this type of stuff. And he's definitely wounded by Arsenal right now. Did you guys feel that? Like,
We're all hurt. The fans just express it in different ways.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of the Arsenal fan base, the range goes from where Hugh is to toxic.
Yeah.
And everywhere in between, because we're all at different stages in this, because some want to find out what happened in the past to make sure they know. Some are dealing with the here and now. Look at us in the league table, and everywhere in between, we're all dotted about. And it's hard for us. You remember I said it on one of our shows before, we have to go through the pain, and we're going through the pain.
Mm-hmm. It's been tough. Well, look, We've had an amazing week at HSHQ. We did a couple double bills. We've had some great guests on. Please go to the channel if you've missed anything. You can check it all out there. It's a massive game on Sunday. I don't even want to ask these guys about predictions, but I'm going to, and it's up to them if they want to get involved in that.
Mine.
No, we still could do the same, can't we?
It's going to be mine. 2-1 to the Arsenal.
So both of you going for 2-1?
I'm with PG, 2-1. Arsenal.
Okay, all right. I'm going to go for a 2-2. I just don't want to lose the game. I just don't want to lose the game. And it's important for Arteta because he's, as I said before, he's never beaten Mourinho as a player, I believe. And obviously as a manager at Arsenal, he's not done that yet. Being an assistant at City doesn't count.
I cannot stand Mourinho.
This is what's making it worse, isn't it? Yes. It's the fact that it's him as their manager.
Someone put in the chat, I just noticed, asked Princess Guna about Mourinho. Because they know how I feel.
No, he's been very derogatory to our football club. And that's why I didn't want him in as manager.
What did he say today, Kev?
I don't know. I don't listen to him. I don't read anything he says. No. People have to tell me what he says. Because I'm not interested in that guy at all. But he's going to try and stoke the fire. I could guarantee you that.
Okay.
I don't think Arteta goes down that road, does he?
No,
he's not that sort of man.
He's a bit classier than that.
He won't even enter his head. But I just hope, you know, we all hope that they come out and understand what this means on Sunday, every single flipping player. Because all of us in our lives, every Arsenal fan on this planet, and I will generalise, know someone Tottenham in their lives, friends, family, work colleagues. There is someone in your life, a distant anybody, we all know, and same for them as well. It means so much. And you know, I was talking to my Man City friend this morning how much they hate United. It's the same anywhere, any derby is the same. It means so much. And the fact that we can't be there breaks my heart, because we would have rocked that ground on Sunday at 4:30.
I saw you put up, Sophie. Someone put 5-2. Now, if we win 5-2, we won 5-2, I am telling you now, there is a couple of 2.5-hour shows next week.
I'll be on there for 4 hours.
I'm telling you. What?
We'll go into Monday, and we won't do a show on Monday, put it that way.
We'll be singing.
Here's what he said. This is what pisses me off. He's so passive-aggressive and yet also very aggressive.
Yeah, it works.
He doesn't look down the table. What a dick.
Do you know what, though? I think it's brilliant. I mean, I'm not being funny. It's embarrassingly brilliant because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he does.
Just don't even write. Do you know what it reminds me of? Adrian Durham. Don't listen. Don't rise to it. Don't tweet him. Don't do anything. They want oxygen. Don't give it to these people. I think that's funny from Mourinho. I do. It's funny.
Here's the scoop.
I don't look down the table either.
He makes it all so much worse. Right, I'm going to ask you guys a question one more time before we go, and it's important. PG, I asked this question to everybody this week, and the question is, if Willian scores the winner in the North London Derby, does he become an instant cult hero? Yep. Or does not because he was a Chelsea player?
No, nothing to do with it. He would be a hero. He's starting to play better anyway. Anyone will be a hero. If Leno doesn't fuck up, he will be a hero as well. Stop doing what they're doing in defence. It's making me ill. I wasn't on last night, but I popped on for a second and I was annoyed with young KC. I can't believe anyone is not blaming Leno for that. But anyway, you've done all that. He will be a cult hero.
All right, really?
Yes, really. Okay.
All right. So when Leno passes the ball and the midfield player takes it and tries to beat someone in midfield, that's Leno's fault.
The reason is he shouldn't have passed him because he was under pressure.
No, he wasn't.
He was. He had two players on him.
He wasn't. He passed the ball and he tried to beat somebody in the midfield.
I understand. Sabayas was at fault, but Leno was at fault. For me, much more. But anyway, I know there's a whole big debate going on, but it's fine. Guess what, he did it to Xhaka as well.
What you got? Look,
guys, I got a new light. So when it's a 4 a.m. kickoff, you can see me now.
All right, all right.
Instead of sitting in the dark. Well, you're lucky because it's not a 4 a.m. Is it on?
No, it's not, thank God. I thought I'd break that up because you know what? It doesn't matter who makes the mistakes. We bloody make the mistakes. And against this team on Sunday, we can't afford to make them. They are going to – he's going to be ready for this, Mourinho, and we need to be ready. I have a feel. I know Arteta will be ready, but will the players be ready? And I say that because you have to defend what he's done over the last few games. So honestly, just can't take it. Right?
I think they'll be ready. I think they're pumped up from last night. You know, they were 1-0 up, 1-1, felt like a bloody loss at that moment, and then they come back to win it. If their momentum's not high, they're at the Emirates. I know we're not there, but I think they'll be pumped up. I think we'll see a good game.
Right. Okay, it's been a good week. I know it's a halo. That's what they call it, right? Archangel, thanks. Yeah, it's a halo light. Thank you, FIFA boy Darren. Thanks to all the squaddies who have participated in the show. If you're listening, our competition winner, I will email you. Your ticket number is 68 for the Patrick Vieira drawing today. So hopefully we'll see if you have won. His name is totally, I'm so spaced right now. I'm so tired, but in a good way. Thanks to everyone who's engaged with us all week. We'll be back with another football prizes auction for next week as well. Don't forget, I'm going to repost it today. If you have any questions about the football app and the football app show with Mr. Geordie Pete Redding, please reach out, thehybridsquad@gmail.com. I'm going to send the link.
To Matty K, Amesy, and everyone who logged in. I hope you got my message as well.
Yeah. So a ton of you have already gone in and checked it out and stuff like that. So thanks for doing that. I'm going to include the link with the code on the show replay as well as in the body of the description on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Right. That is it. Please speak now or forever hold your peace.
But it's not it, because you and I are on another podcast at 10 p.m. tonight.
Wait, what? Oh, yeah, that's at 10 p.m., not now.
My time. English time.
How are you going to stay up until then?
Well, it's Friday night and I can.
Friday night's going to be all right. It's going to be right. It's going to be all right now, baby.
So come and join me and Sophie on the Gooners pod with Mike. We're going to have a little Greek celebration. It's his birthday. And we'll be back later, me and Sophie.
We'll also be on, if anyone wants to join, we're going to do a North London derby show. We'll definitely be on post-game, but look out for some drops on Twitter for a pre- and halftime show. But we'll definitely be back for the post-game show. Kev, are you working that show? Are you working the game or are you?
Hey, I'm just finding out now. I'm like, whoa, hold on a minute.
No, Rich. Are you working? Are you coming
on
the
show? Working?
No, I'm what's wrong with that? Relax. If we're doing it, I can be there. So just chill out.
We always do a post-game show. Of course, we're always going to do a post-game show. So I'm throwing out there might be a drop, a surprise for people to look out for a pre-game and maybe halftime. So good luck to Arsenal. Good luck to the boys. Good luck to every Arsenal fan out there. And until Sunday, try to relax, have a pina colada. We'll go for a walk in the rain. Do something.
We spoke about pina coladas today.
Isn't that weird?
Right. We've got to be on it. We've got to be ready. And we've got to be always Arsenal.